Looking back over my life, spent the most of it tongue-tied. And I wish I'd had more time listening to you speak your mind. Now I'm thinking about it every day on my mind, a typical way. Are you a life force? Thinking about it every day on my mind, a typical way. Are you a life force?
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Penick. And we got a fun post-Super Bowl show for you. Chris Snee, two-time Super Bowl champion, all-pro interview. My goal eventually is to interview all of these guys separately and then have them on for one, one big interview together, that five offensive linemen. But I was really excited, a little over 20 minutes, and he was a good interview, right? I was a little worried going in that he might be a little dry, not want to give too much, but he was actually a pretty, like, he was open and honest about some things. And it was fun to listen to.
2027, the 20th anniversary. They're all going to come back to Jersey, you know, because at the stadium, right? They're all going to be invited back. We invite all of them to the Candlewick Diner, and we have a live event with all of them. That's my vision.
Okay, that's a good thing to speak into existence. Remember when people were like, the Giants are throwing these ceremonies to distract us from the team being so bad. It's like, no, they didn't get to pick when the 10-year anniversary of Super Bowl 46 was. Okay, and yes, they retired Eli Manning's jersey, and they realized they couldn't retire Eli's and not Strahan, so they did both in the same year.
And also, Eli Manning retired right before COVID, and
they weren't going to retire him in front of nobody.
In front of an empty stadium, yeah. Hi, Bobby Skinner. Yeah, I couldn't be part of the Chris Snee interview because it was on Friday. I was filming the Combine on Friday, and I'm really excited to hear it. I heard the first 15 seconds of it, and I'm like, oh, your first question, it could go off the rails pretty quick. But hey, he was a good sport about it, and he wasn't even a good sport. It was a fair question. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to actually listen to the rest of it. Nice little 22-minute interview for you post-Super Bowl.
Yeah, and we'll do a little Super Bowl recap at the end. Before we get into it, by the way, we're becoming just an offensive line podcast, right? It's like whether it's current, former.
Become?
Future players. We are simply just an offensive line.
Yeah, we are.
Podcast. Like the O-Line Report, we are just embracing the culture of that. Justin, this episode was brought to you by some special people. We got Andrew Gabowski. The big Gabowski. That is my ultimate on a plane. I think I've watched that movie 10 times on the plane, The Big Lebowski. And then Revolving Doors, that's his name. And honestly, I know what he's trying to do. I know what trying joke he's going to set up. But you know what? How about, you know, you not get a revolving door? How about you fix your own door, you doorman? Justin, who are these people?
These doormen went to patreon.com/talkgiants for $2 a month. Plus, some of the teachers get to hang out with us live while we record the shows, even on a day like today, where it's nice and a little casual. Bobby Skinner will send you some stickers in the mail. Plus, there's some shirt Ralphs. Get a cool shirt like this, like I'm wearing right now, for you audio people. It's a helmet that has Talk of Giants on it. And I like this shirt because it looks like the old school Giants helmet. And I like the rustic look of it. Patreon.com/Talking Giants. Thanks for our patience.
We actually just get a helmet that has that, by the way. That's kind of been one of my goals, is just to have a helmet like that.
I mean, we can definitely order a helmet off of like Shutt or Rydell, and it's just the Giants color blue, and then we just put a Talk of Giants sticker on it.
Yeah, and then I thought it'd be cool if we get every Giants player we interview to sign it.
That is also my eventual goal, 100%.
All right, let's get this. Speaking of guys we've interviewed, here is Chris Snee.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Whoa.
Tuesday after the Super Bowl, so it was only right to finally get on the show. Two-time Super Bowl champ, three-time All-Pro, Chris Snee. First question. You were 5 minutes late. Does Coughlin time not mean anything to you anymore?
He's in a different state, so I think I'm safe. He doesn't have Twitter or anything, so I don't think he'll see this interview. So we're good. I think I'm safe.
Okay, good. Well, first, thanks for jumping on. I know you're a busy man at Boston College. How's that gig going? What does all that entail? Because, you know, analysts can mean a million different things with a college program.
It does, and it's still kind of reshaping all the time with the rule changes in college football. But it was something where I wanted to be around the game. And, when I left Jacksonville after being there for 4 years, kind of had a hard time getting back in the league. So, BC reached out, and it's close enough where I kind of go back and forth. And, my emphasis is still on personnel, so I help with the recruiting side of it. But then also the assist in the development of the younger players is critical because you're, obviously within the rules, but there to watch film and just kind of, like I said, help the young guys develop. And but it's more, 75% of a personnel job.
So, I mean, a question I would have is, like, a guy like Christian Mahogany, who's going to be in the draft this year, who's been on our radar, we've talked about a little bit. What is your relationship with him since he's specifically on the offensive line?
Well, I've gotten a chance to be with him for 2 years. So it's a good sample size to kind of get to know a person, kind of let him into my circle and him and me into his. So it was, it's a good relationship. Christian's a great player. So kind of when you get there and it's the unfortunate situation where, he's hurt and, so that first year kind of just watching him rehab and then him being around the guys and trying to help as much as he can, but I know he was frustrated. So getting to watch him up close and personal this year, through training camp and every practice, and he's a tough, tough dude that loves football. He's a better athlete than people think. And I think everyone saw what he was capable of doing down at the East-West practices. I think he's explosive. He's going to be a good NFL player.
Yeah, he's fun. I mean, he had some, bully moments on film that are fun to watch. And like you said, I think it showed up in that Shrine Bowl. But getting into your Giants career, I know you've been asked about this a bunch, but you end up being an All-Pro, so the conversation is a fun one. But you got drafted by your father-in-law, Tom Coughlin, and his first year with a second regime. Was that uncomfortable at all? And if it was, like, when did that become like a comfortable workplace, workplace relationship with him?
I mean, listen, it's hard for me to put in perspective any other situation, but I think coming in as a rookie, I would have been uncomfortable anywhere just because of who I am. I'm a quiet guy, kind of keep my head down, do my job, try to be in and out of there. Respect the elders that have been in the building, which I think is important. And like I said, I'm a rookie, so I was going to go in there and keep my mouth shut regardless. So I think, it only got uncomfortable when guys like Richie Soybert or Sean O'Hara or Luke Pettigrew, felt it necessary to bust my chops and, kind of take it to the next level, so to speak. So those are the only times. Like I said, I was so focused on coming in and proving myself worthy of being a second round pick and, being put as a starter 2 weeks in a training camp. I was swimming. So I was just trying to do everything I could, to get my game up to where it should be, where I could help the team.
What do you have any examples of those guys taking it to the next level? Because I'm fascinated by that dynamic you had with, that not the first five in 2004, but what turned into, I think, the longest running amount of starts by the same five unit. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I think it was. I forget the total number we ended at, but let's see. I mean, Richie was the worst. Soybert, I think if you've gotten to talk to him, he's a ball buster and, still one of my closest friends. But I mean, it's just the prank, the powder blue dye they would always put in my gloves and shoes in training camp, the invisible dye that when you sweat, it makes your hands purple. And, I won't tell you where else they put it. So that was one of them. He used to love to clear out my locker. One day I came in, and he was throwing all this stuff on the ground. It came to the point where it was like, I was like late in the year and it was enough's enough. And then you confront him and it was over. It was almost like he was waiting for me to do that, kind of stand up for myself and say, all right, enough's enough. Tom used to call everyone son, but obviously if he yelled it son to me, it took it to the next level as far as those chops go. So it was more so the pranks, and I was on the consistent end of those rookie year.
Yeah, we actually did talk with Richie Sober, and I think we just spent 10 minutes talking about the different pranks, and I feel like we didn't even, you know, we just got the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, there's a lot we can't say.
Yeah, I can't remember. There was one he said he didn't do. I think it was like releasing some type of animal within in the building. I think no, it was a turkey. I think it was like releasing a turkey. They ended up scrapping that one.
Gray Rugemer put a dead turkey in the back of Rich's truck, and it sat there for probably a couple months. So when Rich found it, ultimately, it was something that you didn't want to see. So that's a good one.
He needs to clean his truck out more.
If you looked inside, there were McDonald wrappers everywhere, and you know, I love Rich, but you know, he didn't eat the best. So it was always he opened the truck door and just stuff would just fall out, and you know, chew cans and everything else. So, but that was a good one. Gray Rugemer was pretty good at that stuff too. Gray had some really really good ones. That he should be proud of.
You guys have all went on besides Kareem McKenzie, who I think is just lives alone in the woods or something. Deal is at Memphis. Richie's doing high school. You're doing Boston College, and then O'Hara has become a TV star. Like, how close are you with that group now? Because it really felt, whether it was Silent Library with Boston and Tollefson, like that. Like, I know family probably gets a little overused in football, but that you guys generally were a family.
We were. We spent every minute together, and I can't stress that enough. And that's something I kind of told the guys at BC that. Now they do it. I mean, we eat breakfast together. We'd bring it in, watch film. Lunch was, we'd order out and, bring food in. And Friday was, you're going to notice it was always revolved around food, but Friday was pizza, breakfast. We ate our food in the meeting room, and we always broke down film. We covered every situation possible so that when the game came through, not every time you're going to be able to make a call. There's always there's got to be stuff that you just adjust to on the fly. So the fact that you're able to do that, I knew Kareem saw what I saw, and Sean, was a highly intelligent football player. So I never questioned that he knew what he was doing. But to the comfort of knowing that in this full speed game that these guys both know that we're seeing the same thing, it made us, pretty dominant at times. And I can say that now. I never would have said that when I was playing, just because that was our mindset too. But, going back and watching some of the games and just the, our combination blocks and our, play to the whistle mentality. I think, there should be cut-ups made of that, and people should, these new players should be watching it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in college at, a low-level, school in Minnesota, and we started working on some counter stuff, and we literally were breaking down your guys' film as the example to do it. And I think it really, you hear coaches like, Goosh, right? Like, he still references you guys. You guys get referenced a lot, whether in McNally, like a lot, you guys get talked about a lot. And it's, I really do view it as like a special offensive line group. And hey, it led to some Super Bowls. When did you like feel confident in yourself? I mean, you became an all pro, right? Three time all pro. When did you really start to get confidence in like, okay, I'm here and I'm one of the better guys in the league?
I don't know. It took a while. Believe it or not, I've always lacked self-confidence. So, I was my second year was not like fourth honorable mention for the Pro Bowl, and then it kept going. But probably like that Super Bowl year, I felt really good. I felt really strong. That was kind of always something I hung my hat on, was kind of being the strongest guy in the field. So, that Super Bowl year, and then the following year, I made my first Pro Bowl. It was like one of those where, Larry Allen finally decided to retire, so a spot opened up on the Pro Bowl team, and then I took it. I was like very thankful for that, because he would have kept making those Pro Bowls and I would have been an alternate for the rest of my life. But it was probably around that year three, year four, where I really, really felt like I was coming to my own. And then for that a 4-year stretch, I do feel like I was one of the better ones in the game before my body started to fall apart.
It's tough for offensive line with awards because you don't have stat. I know PFF does a pretty good job of tracking some of that stuff, but Andrew Thomas now, who got all pro last year, we're close with him, and I was campaigning for him to win awards. But it's tough when it's like, yeah, but Trent Williams is still in the NFL and played games this year, and it's hard to unseat guys like him and Larry Allen.
It's amazing. He and Kelsey, it's amazing how at their age how well they're performing. And I look back and say, what you know, what could I have done differently as far as my training? Should I have stopped doing the strongman stuff that got me to be so strong? But then again, maybe I wouldn't have been such a good player from year four to year eight. I don't know. But like the longevity and consistency is what everyone strives for. And the fact that those two are great examples of that. And, you know, it's truly, truly amazing that they're able to get their bodies ready for these battles every week.
I've been asking every offensive lineman we talk to, whether it's current Giants, former Giants, or guys in the draft, what is your favorite run concept to run?
Oh, I love gap, just power, you know, and preferably one where Rich would pull. So, you know, I felt like Kareem and I did a good job of, you know, double teaming a three technique and, you know, coming off the ball. So whether it's inside zone or, you know, gap, power scheme, I definitely enjoyed those. Early on, I used to love being the lead puller, you know, but then as you get a little bit older, you're, you know, kind of dreading that collision that's coming around the corner. So definitely inside zone, you know, gap scheme.
Is there a play that just kind of comes back to mind that you can like, man, we ran that exactly like it goes on the whiteboard or no?
I mean, I think there's a lot of examples of, like, I'm talking about like the 36 power we used to run where, you know, the double team was perfect. Sean had the back block, the tight end did job securing the DN, and then Richie would pull around tight for the Mike backer. You know, I think there's a lot of examples of that. And we ran that to death, and then it kind of evolved to the three wide, you know, the sub run game, which is, you know, still the gap scheme, but without the lead blocker and the fullback. So, you know, I think one example, probably not, because I like to feel that there were a bunch, you know, it's more so like the ones, like the adjustments that you make that aren't on the whiteboard. You know what I'm saying? Like there was one right in the Super Bowl where we had a play called and really Eli should have checked out of it, but he left it on. And, you know, it was upon us guys up front to kind of adjust the blocking scheme. And we did that. And it actually turned out to be like a 10-yard run. So, and one where I got to get my hands on Rodney Harrison, which everyone loves. So, it was, you know, that was we came off and you know, Flats, Coach Flaherty's like, why didn't you guys tell him to get out of it? And we just said, we fixed it. You know, we fixed it. We made it work. And so that's what you have to do sometimes in the battle.
That's awesome. You know, watching some of the Giants offensive line struggles now where it's like, man, just a certain fronts just give them it fits where, like you said, you guys made it work. I want to ask you about a silent library. Who had it the toughest and the easiest in that? I feel like there is a right and wrong answer for the toughest part of this.
I mean, I'm smiling now because that was such a fun day. Like literally, like my insides hurt from laughing, you know, for the 3 hours that we were on set. And I still smile thinking about Sean O'Hara getting plastered by the tennis balls, which he didn't know were coming.
Dude, they nailed him. He was getting fucking drilled like five times in a row. I don't understand. I was worried about his like breaking his nose. I don't care if there's a mask or not.
Yeah. Listen, I think, yeah, there's concern about that for sure. Cause those things were humming. And then, you know, the maple syrup tennis, we had this big dinner planned after and the restaurant owner kind of took care of us and he brought all his food, but we drank so much maple syrup. I mean, that's basically like a laxative. So like we were like, you know, sick the entire night. We barely ate the dinner that was brought out for us. It was almost like we were forced it down because we felt bad. So I would, and I had it the easiest, and I can admit now that I knew which was the safe card. So, or which was the card that made you do the prank. And I knew that early on, just using my BC degree, you know, kind of outsmarted the guy. So I used that and,
makes finally, sense now that Tolleson had to do the smoothie.
Yeah,
now.
Well, the D linemen don't pick up that stuff. So, so yeah. Finally, at the end, they kind of forced me to pick the card. So that's when I did the Godzilla one. Which honestly, if you know me, like nobody touches my feet, so that's kind of like my thing. So the fact that I just step on Legos, like it was torturous for me. So it was almost fitting that, you know, they saved that for me because I was trying to outsmart the system.
Who from that group are you like the closest with now?
It's tough with Tollefson and Boss because they moved away, you know, but we still speak. I mean, Sean O'Hara, if you saw where I live, he's probably a couple of 100 yards down the street. So I see him all the time. We're, you know, we both coach our boys in football. So we're on the same football field together and our kids go to school together. So I see Sean a lot. And then Richie, I talked to a bunch. Like you said, Kareem comes and goes. You know, he's got a lot going on with what he's doing, his job. So it's, I talked to probably them the most, Sean and Rich. And then I actually talked to Deal yesterday. just to kind of check in with his situation at Memphis. And, you know, who's lost in this is kind of our sixth man. Kevin Booth is probably one of my closest friends. I talk to him all the time.
Yeah. It's how does Deal like the new college gig? Because he was doing media with the Giants for a while. And how does he like the college life?
Dave was always extremely detailed when he played. So, which doesn't surprise me that he did well with the commentary, but also like with coaching, because he's going to cover every detail, technique, film. You know, he took a lot of pride in that, his notes, which, you know, kind of gets lost nowadays with these young players is taking thorough notes. So, I'm not surprised. And he's got full of energy, which, you know, in college you need it. And, you know, I wish I had his energy because, you know, recruiting is nonstop. You've got to be available. It's really, really a tough schedule for these college coaches.
What's your relationship with Eli like these days? Or is he too much of a media star to talk to now?
Yeah, I'm a little disgusted with the last, like, the, you know, everything else I've been seeing with the rap video and, you know, but no, I'm kidding. We see each other probably 2 or 3 times a year. You know, definitely always at a Giants game. We golfed together this summer. I'm going to take my 13-year-old to his quarterback camp in June. So there's, you know, always playful banter, text chains going around. But as far as like being together, you know, he's kind of in the thick of it. He's got the 4 kids, whereas I have 2 out of the house, and we're kind of like, you know, old kids, young parents is what we are. So it's, you know, different phases of our life, but we still a couple times a year.
It's kind of crazy to see how, you know, he went from, you know, quiet Eli to now this media star.
He's always been, though. We've always said he's a funny guy, and everyone would be like, really, Eli? Like, he doesn't give that off when he was playing, but he used to have fun. You know, he was one of the pranksters too.
Yeah. You know, we were just down at the Senior Bowl and we got an Airbnb for our crew, and our TV was in Japanese. And I finally was like, you know what, I don't like this Eli prank. This sucks. Whoever was here before us really screwed us on this. Like, it took me 15 minutes watching tutorials on how to get our TV out of Japanese.
That was his famous one. Yeah, he'd find a phone, he'd change it, and then kind of giggle it, like you're trying to figure out, you have to, you know, grab a comparable phone and try to figure out how to, you know, settings. Yeah, that was that. He took pride in that one.
Yeah. Now, but it is the year now, so we got to get a headline grab. Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Absolutely. I just needed you to have. This is the year, so I'm going all out. We are on the Eli Defense Brigade to get him into the Hall of Fame. So needed.
Great. Needed that. Can we get me past the first cut? I mean, I make the initial ballot, and I can't make the next cut. I mean, I think
it's a shame. It really is. So tough for often, and especially interior guys, like tackle guys, maybe have a little hard. Like if you had the same career at tackle,
it's hard. And it, you know, it all boils down to, you know, the longevity and the Pro Bowls and things like that, which I get. Which I was so happy that Tony got in Baselli, because, you know, injuries kind of shortened that career. So he was definitely a Pro Bowl player. And you know, to me, like the number 5, it's how do you pick 5 every year? You know, it's to me, if you're worthy, you're worthy, and then you get in. So. You know, because, you know, life's precious. You never know what's going to end. So you obviously want to, you know, get in when you're still on this earth, you know, and you want to kind of, you know, wear that jacket and be a Hall of Famer.
All right. So I think the Talking Giants family is going to have to take that upon us to get Chris Knee in the Hall of Fame, or at least get, like you said, get you past the first cut.
Yeah. Come on. Give me a little excitement.
So we always got to ask everybody, that was part of this play, a part about it. Who up front did the worst job on the helmet catch?
There we go. I was the only one that did my job.
McKenzie did pretty damn good.
Kareem did, and he came back. So it's like it's just comical at this point, because O'Hara's the one that likes to call me out, you know. And like if you get beat that bad, you shouldn't be calling anyone out, you know. So in reality, I did my job. I got a +++ in the grade sheet. You know, I was responsible for Junior Seau. He just slid and then dropped. And by the time I looked to help, all hell broke loose on the left side. So, you know, looking back, what did you want me to do if you're flipped this way and then you're seeing your quarterback in someone's grasp run right at him? Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, in reality, like, Deal Soybean O'Hara just sucked on the play. And, you know, Eli, you know, saved the day. And Tyree, of course.
I told you before the show, eventually I want to get all 5 of you guys, you know, together on some type of show. And I think I'm just going to have each of one of you go one by one, breaking that down on the whiteboard of, like, you know, what was the call? What happened?
Please do. Save me for last, please.
I will. I'll start Kareem first and be like, all right, you give us the unbiased opinion, and then we'll go from there. And as we, you know, come off the Super Bowl, and this will finish off of this, any Super Bowl memory, whether it's after the field, that, like, really sticks with you, whether it's, you know, being with family, you know, where, like, because you guys are remembered, you guys are immortalized forever. Is there a moment that sticks out with you?
I just got chills because the image is clear. So the first one's great, right? No one expects us to win. We beat New England. Great. You know, but the second one, having my two older boys at the game and then identifying them through the confetti, you know, literally, like, my wife and the two boys were, like, the last ones on the field. And I have a great picture of it in my office. You know, I'm looking frantically for where they are, and then they kind of come streaming out of the tunnel, and, you know, tears are flowing everywhere. I bring my boys up on the podium, and, you know, that second one, I savored every moment. I was the last one to come off the field. I was the last one to leave the locker room. I shaved my disgusting red beard in the locker room. You know, it was just one of those where I kind of, it's hard to get there, right? And to be there, to fortunate enough to win twice, you know, and the second one, just to enjoy it with my family. Whereas the first one, like, they were young and I just really wanted to get back and celebrate. And it was one of those where I'll never forget, you know, the conversations we had. And I said, just the moment of holding the trophy, holding my sons in my arms, and, you know, with all family around me, it was, and that's because it really, it is, it's not just about me and, or this player, it's about the team. And part of the team is the family, because all that sacrifices go into it.
You know, we've talked to a lot of guys from that team, whether it's Brandon Jacobs, and it, you know, it really stands out. I truly think family is the most overused word in football, right? Like, truly. But that team, man, it's like, even some of the stuff that's happened throughout the years with the Giants, you're like, man, that shit just wouldn't have flown, right? Like, you know, we've talked with Tolleson. It's like, man, if you didn't hustle to the play in practice, like, you got your, like, reamed out. That doesn't happen as much anymore. You know, even stuff with a star like Odell, we talked with Brandon Jacobs when he was kind of on his way out and had some stuff. And he's like, we would have not let that shit happen. Like, that type of stuff wouldn't have happened. And yep, it's pretty cool to, you know, see how, you know, tight you guys were. But Chris, appreciate you jumping on. Been wanting to do this one for a long time. So excited we were able to get it done. Yep. Good luck with Boston College. We'll be watching and rooting for you. And maybe we'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate the time.
Hey, Shirley, you better hope I never get back in there. I will kick your ass. Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
All right, thank you, Christine, for jumping on the podcast. Justin, we only time of year where we just talk about general football, because I don't think anyone's really – this is what everyone's interested in, talking about the Super Bowl. This was our first year, like, actually just fully covering the NFL. You know, on Jam Football – you know, so, you know, a little more skin in the game with this one. And, like, my big takeaway from this Super Bowl, really nothing about team building, unless your team building was like, well, go get Patrick Mahomes. But what my thing is, I'm like, man, it just is so hard, because we've essentially passed the baton from Brady to Mahomes that just stopped, like, great quarterbacks from winning Super Bowls, right? Like, Josh Allen is one of the best playoff performing quarterbacks ever, right? It is so early in his career. Outside of that Bengals game last year, he's been great in the playoffs, yet it doesn't matter because he's had to run into Mahomes, you know, a few times, right? Like, one of the best playoff performances of all time was a loss because of the, you know, the 13 seconds in Kansas City where they changed overtime rules. And it's just, like, so many guys, like, you know, Justin Herbert, who I think is a top five quarterback in the NFL, right? I truly believe that. He's in the same division as this guy, and we don't even view it as a rivalry, despite the fact that they play close games, because that's how much Mahomes is on a different level. Like, the last six Super Bowls, five of them have went to either Brady or Mahomes, and they truly have passed the baton from one to the next.
Yeah, after the Chiefs knocked down the Bills, you kind of got the feeling like, all right, you know, if they turn around and they win it all again, no one is shocked. No one is shocked at this point. And this was the Chiefs down year, Bobby. Like, that, I've been saying it, and I'm sure even you and Chris Rose on Football Today have been saying it, where this was not supposed to be the year that the Chiefs won this. This was supposed to be the rest of the NFL's time to catch up, because the Chiefs' tackles, not very good. Jawan Taylor, they paid a lot of money for Jawan Taylor to be their starting left tackle. He wound up going to right tackle, and he's been not very good this year. I mean, remember back to week one where he just couldn't be still in a stance, and he's bouncing that right foot up in the air. Mahomes had a very expensive cap hit. His cap hit goes up really high for the first time in his career. Oh, yeah, and what position are they drafting in the first round this year of the NFL draft? Like, there's no doubt what position they're drafting. What position are they drafting?
I would assume Xavier Worthy, welcome to the Kansas City Chiefs.
They're drafting a wide receiver, and they're going to get better.
Yeah, this is the year where it's like, man, I think there's legit wide receiver one talent that's going to be available at that point of the draft. But here's where I will say it's not like a total down year, is that defense was sick, right? Yeah. And honestly, the defense outperformed their offense through the playoffs, but having like the same time, my point has always been like, why still offense over defense? And it's like, I don't think there's any other quarterback in the NFL who wins the Super Bowl with this situation. But Spags, like, he called up some game plans, and his game plan for San Fran was great. He to me thoroughly outcoached Kyle Shanahan. Basically, he's like, all you're going to do is you're going to want to throw these in breakers. We're going to blitz to one, to pressure Purdy and force the ball out quick, and we're going to play inside leverage, and we're going to blitz to try and stop the run, which they did a solid job of doing, even though Shanahan got away from it a little bit. But they never like had the explosive runs either, even though I thought the 49ers probably should have ran the ball a little more. The defense, that's my argument. It was when they lost on Christmas, right, to the Raiders, and everyone's like, this team is stunk. And I remember doing Football Today with Chris Rose. I'm like, are the Chiefs not Super Bowl contenders? I'm like, no, because they have the best quarterback in the NFL. You have Travis Kelce, who's, maybe the best tight end of all time. And then you have the number two defense in the NFL, led by Chris Jones, who is a game wrecker. And all of those things came to fruition for the Super Bowl run.
Yeah, man. Talent up and down that defense, too, where Chris Jones, I really want to try and do a video on this. Definitely, there was a 49ers red zone trip where Chris Jones got a game, or a drive-saving pressure where it resulted in 3 points instead of possibly 6 points. And then the second one, I think Chris Jones might have mentioned on ESPN that he was unblocked. I actually want to go back and see
it. Yeah, he was. It was a horrible protection call by the 49ers. They totally blew it.
How are you letting Chris Jones, like a future Hall of Fame player, how are you letting him unblocked on like a third and goal situation where he can disrupt your quarterback like that? So,
and on the McDuffie blitz, they kept Kittle in to double Chris Jones, and McDuffie is free because of Kittle going to double Chris Jones instead of just, picking it, scanning for the blitz.
Yeah. I'm happy for Spags. Very happy for Spags.
It'd be interesting to see if he ever gets like head coaching consideration again, or if he's just going to be content being the Chiefs. Just, hey, be the defensive coordinator for Patrick Mahomes' team, and you're going to go down as like, an all-time great coordinator. But
has there ever been like a Hall of Fame coordinator?
No, but if we're putting Devin Hester in, maybe we can consider that. Over Antonio Gates is nuts. Eli Manning Hall of Fame year, by the way. Fight the fight. Anyone tries to say no, you get toxic in their mentions. By the way, but Spags called a game yesterday. Like it was truly beautiful. Like I was saying, like what, and with Shanahan, right? Like counter, dude. Counter, throw a fade. Right? Like, look at where these corners are lining up. Throw outbreaking routes. I know that is not Brock Purdy's strength. I know. But it's there. And he can throw those.
It was there a couple times that they did it, but not enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And, throw to, 15-plus yards towards the sideline. It was there. Right? I know, the pressure was there a lot, so it's hard to let some of those things happen. But let Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk just go win on the sideline.
Yeah. But instead it was Juwan Jennings and Conley that were some of the more – I think Conley, like, in the first half, and then I think his name is Conley, that receiver
was in the 80s.
And then Juwan Jennings in the second half, where if the 49ers win it, Juwan Jennings has, like, a case for MVP. which is crazy.
One of your guys, by the way, I remember in that.
Oh, I loved
him. Was that the 2020 draft?
Yeah, it was the 2020 draft. And in my, you know, in my one tweet where I kind of put out like a little bit of a highlight, I mentioned that he's a really good blocker too. Lo and behold, that is why he is in San Francisco with the 49ers. So, you know, those were the two guys that were like mainly winning for the 49ers offense. And it was not Ayuk. Debo had some nice plays, but, you know, for two players that you consider all pro, Kittle didn't do anything. So, I remember Belichick on the sideline saying, make them throw it to Manningham. Guarantee you Spags is on the sideline saying, make them throw it to Conley and Jawan Jennings. And that's exactly what the 49ers did. And they were not disciplined to stay with the run, which I agree with you that they should have stayed disciplined with the run. Because while they're not getting the 10-plus yard runs, you're getting 4, 5, 6, 7 yards a pop. And I thought that Kyle Shanahan would be the coach to stay disciplined to it, but there's not a lot of coaches that will stay disciplined to it these days. Coaches want to throw the ball.
Yeah, that was pretty. I mean, you look at it, and I know this isn't the most fair thing, because when you throw on first down and it doesn't work, then it's like, okay, well, running on second down, second and 10 or second and 15 is not smart, simply because you want to talk about how we ran the ball. But, you know, they ran the ball 14 times on those last three, you know, scoring drives, or handed it off. You know, they maybe ran a little more. Is there any like New York Giants team building Super Bowl takeaways from this? Because besides, get Patrick Mahomes, man, we need a great quarterback. Like, right, obviously. And guess what? Like, I want the Giants to get a quarterback and a great quarterback. I have no expectations of him being Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's just unrealistic expectations. You know, you hope you get someone who can duel with Patrick Mahomes, like Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Because my only one would, not my only, is, man, don't overthink the draft. Like, I really think the Chiefs have not overthought the draft and just drafted players who are good. George Karloftis falling so far in the draft to me was nuts, right? Like, I don't understand that. Made a huge mistake. Leo Chanel went for a third round comp pick, Justin. We were talking about this guy like top of the second round. I thought he was worthy of a late first round, but like.
And by the way, at that point they had.
And look at the linebackers they already have too.
They had Nick Bolton and Willie Gay.
Yeah, and they already had just take the best players, try and build. You know, just get full talent. I mean, their corners, McDuffie. I mean, he was, you know, the star of the game. He was locking those cats up.
Snead is really good too.
Yeah. So,
I'm with you. I'm gonna bounce off that. It's not really it is about the draft, because how you improve your team the most in the NFL is by the draft, and it isn't with this game. Like, I didn't, maybe in years past when I didn't watch the NFL enough, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take a lesson out of this game. The lesson that I really took just from this NFL season, watching how many good, like, there was a lot of good teams this year. The Ravens were a really good team. All the Ravens did this year was beat the shit out of teams that are above 500. Like, an NFL record, like 7 or 8 games this year, they beat teams that are above 500 by 14 points. They lost that game to the Chiefs, obviously, in the championship game. Lions, years of just good drafting, you know, all pros at every level. And where you look at the Giants, man, 49ers, all pros at every level. And even though, like, the Chiefs don't have all pros at every level, but they still have defensive side of the ball, they do have those really, really good players at all levels. All pros. McDuffie was an all pro. I thought Snead should have been an all pro. Chris Jones is a really good player. And then obviously they have like three, four really good linebackers. So the point is, the Giants are really far away from being one of those teams that they have really good players, like close to all pro players at all phases and all levels. They're not far from being a team that could sort of compete and move up in the world, but they're far away from being like one of the top teams in the NFL. Like, they're not far away from being like the Packers, you know, from being a young team that can maybe go on a little bit of a run and you could see promise there. But they're definitely far away, and a lot of players on this roster still proving what they got, like Kayvon Thibodeau, from being like the Lions, the 49ers, and definitely like the Chiefs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even though, like you said, the Chiefs down here, it's like, man, they've Okay, but they have Patrick Mahomes, Travis right. Kelce, Chris Jones.
But that's not going to be every team. Like, every team is not going to have Patrick Mahomes. So I think you, like, I think the comparison is you look to teams like the Lions.
They have three of, like, the best at their position in the NFL, too.
Right, right.
Even in a quote-unquote down year. Like, Chris Jones is the second-best defensive tackle to Aaron Donald in the NFL. Like, I think he's better than Dex and Quinnen right now. Travis Kelce may not be the – I mean, I think he was second in tight end receiving this year, only to LaPorta, right?
And
he's led it every single year, right? And even though, like, he may not have the same athleticism, he's still one of the smartest tight ends in the like of all time, to where him and Mahomes – and then obviously Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. And I think he's by a pretty solid margin. Hey, but you know what? We should just share the Ben McAdoo wanted the trade up from 22 for Pat Mahomes, and talk about how Ben McAdoo, that shit still drives me nuts. Like, I understand he wanted him and stuff like that, but he wanted the trade up from 20. Like, the idea that we just passed up on him is a little crazy to me. Obviously, they could have traded up for him. And the also thing is, like, yeah, well, if we did that, I would thank Ben McAdoo for that decision and want him fired, because he has proven to be a horrible offensive coach in the NFL. Like, I remember watching that Panthers offense last year, and not just, oh, they're not talented. Like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, this is there's no rhyme or reason to any of this. But yeah, the guy who was asked a question in a press conference and just stared into the camera blank for 30 seconds. Guy's a fucking genius. I mean, anything else? Did you see that I tweeted out from Talking Giants? Do you think the Giants will take a quarterback in the draft as the game started? And
I was like, yeah, good.
I got a good chuckle out of that, where it's like, you know, because people do it every day, all day. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
All right, Super Bowl's kicking off. We're gonna finally open up this debate. And anything funny? The Tommy DeVito. Do you think the NFL has not realized that Giants fans are not, like, infatuated with Tommy DeVito like they once were?
Oh, I think there's a lot of people that still are infatuated with him. Just as a figure. Not as a quarterback, but as a figure.
I'm so excited to see what he's like, what's happening with his life in 2028.
I'm still infatuated with him as a figure. I'm not really... You know, yeah, I am... I'm really interested to see what happens with his career. Because really, there will be an NFL team. There has been NFL teams to offer him way more money to play for them and not for the Giants. But he's wanted to stay home and he's wanted to stay here. And hey, it worked. There will be an NFL team that will is his contract up? No.
DeVito? No. He's under control.
Okay, so he's under control. So there will be NFL teams that will want him to, that want them, that wants him more than the Giants. And he may not be here because they're going to add another quarterback.
Yeah, they're going to carry three quarterbacks, basically.
And are they going to carry three quarterbacks? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, they did believe in him to start him over Tyrod Taylor in a game. Whether that was peer pressure or not, I don't know.
The main thing about the pizza commercial is that he was with Ginny in Georgia.
I didn't. Someone asked me, like, you got to help an old man out. Like, I don't know who this is either.
Really good show on Netflix. I don't know the actress's name. I mean, she's a very, very good looking woman. But that was a big deal for me. I love Jenny in Georgia. Like, that's a very good show on Netflix. I have to wait till 2025 for season 3. And that's who he was with. I didn't recognize her at first. I'm like, oh my God, I love that show and I love you. Very good looking woman. I hope they are together.
It's a big time commercial too, by the way. It wasn't like he was like some side figure. Like, if he was like a side figure in one of these commercials that has like all of these people. Like, no, like Tiki Barber and, you know, Michael Keegan Key, like, they were side figures in the Tommy DeVito commercial, which is crazy. And obviously love the OC Saquon commercial. I mean, we're big fans of the NFL Pathway program here at Talking Giants. Quick, Sandro Plastikammer and who else from the Giants was through the Pathway program?
Big George was a draft pick. That's not it.
No, it's Roy Embatika.
Ah, yes.
I found highlights of him playing basketball on YouTube.
A lot of Giants fans wanted to see what they got in the kid.
It was funny. Like, we get one player from Africa, and I go like to view his likes. His last like was a John Boy Media tweet. I was like, there's just no way that this world works like this. All right, Justin, that's an episode.
What do we have coming up on Thursday or Friday?
I don't know. Maybe a February mailbag. We'll figure it out. I want to save bigger interviews for the Tuesday pod. So I think eventually we got to have, Ryan Dunleavy on to talk about his Tony Award and maybe get some final closure on some of all this Wayne Kafka stuff, just because we at least know he's not going to make shit up on that. If he doesn't know something, he'll just simply say, I don't know. All right, Justin, that's an episode. We'll see you guys on Friday. Appreciate you very much. It's the Giants year. It's the Giants year. We'll see you then. Until then, let's go big.
John Boy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? John Boy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one. And thank you guys for listening.